I never quite know where we'll meander to.
We'll get somewhere interesting, I bet.
Welcome back to Coach Class with me, Dom Birch. This is the podcast where I get to speak to coaches and inspirational leaders from across the world. I'm absolutely delighted this week to be joined down the line by Kevin McKee. Now, Kevin is joint managing partner at Cole McKee Partnership, and over the last 20 years or so, he's worked with top leaders in many organizations as their trusted advisor, helping them develop their personal leadership style, building on their strengths and managing their weaknesses, and all manner of other things, I'm sure. Kevin, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on Coach Class. Thank you so much.
Thanks for inviting me, Dom. Really pleased to be here.
Now, we actually got introduced through a mutual contact, a guy that I was just about to say, a young chap I know called Justin, because when Justin and I worked together at Diet Line 20 years, we were young whippersnappers straight out of university, more or less.
Yeah, indeed. And I've known Justin for, gosh, it must be easily 10 years now. And I suppose, I'd say you and he are just, by my ancient years, just out of the whippersnapper stage.
I'll take that. And now, you were very generous. When Justin realised I was, I guess people have kind of looked at it as being a bit of a pivot, really. I've decided to follow my passion and get into coaching. And I've just very recently completed the Barefoot coaching course. You were very generous with your time, and Justin said, you must speak to Kevin. Here's somebody who's been there, done that. He'll have some great words of wisdom.
My pleasure. I guess, Dom, at this stage in my life and in my career, as I move toward to the end of doing all of that stuff professionally, and Roselle and I sort of closed down our business, then what I enjoy doing is passing on the skills, the knowledge that I've got where it can be helpful for people, and also to encourage them to follow their own passions and their own dreams in the way that you have.
And one of the things you said to me, because I remember we were chatting and you're going, one of the most important things is to network. And then you said, and the second most important thing is to network. And then you said, you can see where this is heading, can't you, Dom? Just talk to
me
a bit.
Very quick on the uptake, Dom. All over that third one.
Talk me through that, though, because I guess, technology's changed. We've been living through a pandemic. Lots has changed in the world of work over the last 20, 30 years. But the importance of making those connections is something that remains as steadfastly important as it ever was.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's based on the research about how people learn naturally, what they're inclined to do and what they get the most out of. And it's those associations, often quite informal, though they can be formal, where, there's a sort of mutual exchange that's happening. And you can only do that if you're actually in contact with some people. And some people are natural networkers. I've never been like that. I've always had to work at it. But you can get better at networking. And I think part of that is knowing what your own preferences are, who you'd actually be prepared to network with, which is different for each of us. But, everybody I know who's been a big success at anything has networked well enough in order to support that. I don't think any woman or man is an island.
And I've always thought about, in sort of my terms, of just putting credit in the bank. In a sense, putting credit in the bank way before you ever think that you might be in a position to draw down on that credit. And to do so in such a way that you genuinely care about the other person and interested in the other person and what it is they're trying to get out of life or in work or in any particular situation, rather than always being in what can you do for me mode.
Absolutely. There's a sense of it being a fair relationship, isn't it? And people don't need to get exactly the same things out of it. But picking up that point that you mentioned, Dom, about the thinking ahead, there was one of the early books on networking when it became a thing. It was called Dig Your Well Before You're Thirsty. It was a terrific American book, actually, with that title. But it is so true. I'm always encouraging the people that I work with to think about whether they're doing the right amount of networking and type of networking, and to look at what they can do to have that that resource available to them, and to do it in a way that they enjoy and feel fulfilled by.
Absolutely love that. I've scribbled that down. And the other thing, every time I speak to you, Kevin, I always scribble something down. We spoke a few weeks ago in preparation for today's podcast, and we were just talking about things that you pick up in businesses and how the world of work is changing and how hectic it can be now, particularly now we've moved into this sort of I don't know, hybrid remote working, Zoom after Zoom, and very little downtime for people in organisations to do their thinking, to be able to sit on the train, you know, much as we hate the commute. Actually, that was thinking time, it was downtime, travelling between a meeting, all those things. And you said that you'd observed once somebody say, and I forget the organisation, but you said that phrase that don't just stand there, do something. And they used to say, don't just do something, stand there.
Yeah, absolutely. My good friend Tony Walmsley, who was a who ran a petrochemical plant at one stage in his career, and later went into consulting and facilitation, and he said he learned that from his days of being a very, very busy operational senior manager. People were always rushing around when there was a crisis, which in a petrochemical plant, you don't want there to be too many of those. Then everybody's running around like headless chickens. And he said, the best thing he could do as a leader is say, you don't need to rush around. Let's just take it one step at a time, find out how we're going together to put this to rights. So, and I think reflection, those of us who, my background is in psychology, and one of the early things I learned was about some models of learning and the ways in which the human mind works to assimilate and to be able to use information. And because they all include reflection, and yet when you get into business, it's something which, if you sat there at your desk or in your cubicle when you're back in the days when people used to be in the office a bit more, and your boss saw you just sitting there thinking, then there's a good chance they'd say, well, go just do that. Get off and do something. Mm. So, it takes a little courage, I think, to adopt that mindset and that practice of being reflective.
It certainly does. I remember one of my appraisals, and I used to get, decent appraisals. I used to be considered to be somebody that was doing a decent enough job. But I remember one of the feedback comments was, Dom occasionally goes AWOL. And I thought that was really interesting, because I think that was about not necessarily knowing where I was in the building and therefore wondering, where the hell's he gone? And of course, where the hell I'd gone was to go and sit somewhere quiet and write a blog, or to sit somewhere quiet and read an article, or frankly, just meander and allow my brain to expand.
That's the harsh reality of it, Dom. Part of psychology that drew me most was what back in the day was called organizational development. And the essence of organizational development is to enable the system or the individual to become more self-sufficient. So, to work your way out of a job, really. And I remain convinced that is, perhaps we'll talk a little bit about that, about, how coaches operate, the different options that we have, is that you should be promoting and encouraging self-sufficiency in your clients. But the fact is, we've all got to eat. When you're adopting, quite rightly, that reflective approach in your work, then you also have to bear in mind the impact it has in an environment where, as a mentor of mine wants to call it, there's an addiction to action. Mm. You've somehow also got to get that sense that you're someone who's at it, and always trying to make things happen, et cetera, while at the same time using a full learning cycle yourself. I think that's quite a big challenge.
It's a huge challenge, isn't it? That discipline that's required to put in those fire breaks into your own schedule, your own working day, or to read your own kind of mindset, right? Your well-being. You know, I need fresh air. I need to walk around the place. If I'm in the same place too long, I know that I start to deteriorate in terms of my effectiveness. We just lived through the last 18 months, so, you know, we must refer to it. And coming up to that, I guess most of what you were doing was in person with teams in real buildings. How did you address that, particularly knowing you were coming towards, you know, the end of that part of your life, I guess? How was that transition for you? Because I think when we spoke before, you said, you know, you didn't think it was possible, but it turned out it was.
I'd always been pretty dismissive of online and even telephone coaching, to be honest. Because ignorance is gives you freedom to dismiss all sorts of things, really. But when you don't have any choice, then you do, you know, and you want to do a bit more work to do it well, then, you know, I climbed on that learning curve and was surprised at what you can achieve, was pleasantly surprised at what you can achieve. So a particular learning process that my colleague Ken Way and I were due to run face-to-face over 3 days, we, with a great deal of hard work and ingenuity and help from a client, converted into a multi-module, completely on-screen learning experience. And it worked brilliantly. You know, so I'm a lot more optimistic if we are going to be doing this sort of hybrid ways of working and learning, Dom, that they can be very effective. But, you know, you certainly have to work on them. And you also, you know, kind of, I guess that was my experience. I had to suspend some of my own disbelief in order to be able to do it. But I take heart from that, and also from what I hear, you know, other friends and colleagues doing.
I think that's a great phrase, yes, to suspend your disbelief and give it a go. I mean, what I found actually was almost ironically the reverse. Having started to really coach in earnest as part of the Barefoot course, and everything had been on Zoom, I then had a walking in real person coaching session with a real life client, you know, a chief exec level client. And I thought, oh no, I don't have all my post-it notes around my laptop. You know,
interesting.
Yeah, can I do this? And of course, you can do it, and you trust in the process and you tune in. And actually, when you begin to really deeply listen to the client rather than worry about the next question, that's where, you know, the alchemy sits. Kevin, as you, you know, and you were so generous with me, what would your advice be to, you know, burgeoning coaches like me and Barefoot, bless them, what an organisation, are churning us out now, you know, 15 to the dozen, as it were. What's your advice to people entering this world? Because there's a huge demand, isn't there, now? All of the surveys are saying that having tasted, you know, home working and not having to travel, having been around your family more, having been able to be your own boss to some extent, even though you're working for large organizations, a lot of good has come from that taste of, you know, the other side. But I guess that's going to drive an awful lot of people to be questioning, who am I? What's my real purpose in life? Do I want to be on this hamster wheel forevermore? And if not, what are my options?
Yeah, I think that part of what you said there, Dom, was hits on something which I think is vital generally, and particularly in this situation you described, which is self-awareness. I've been lucky enough to work with some terrific top leaders over my career. And I would say that's been common to all of those leaders, is they've got a decent level of self-awareness, by which I mean that, you know, they understand their own abilities, they understand their motivations, they understand what their limitations are as well. You know, anything that any of us does to build our and deepen our self-awareness is money in the bank. And particularly for anybody who is, you know, I think about myself, I worked in big organizations in the first part of my career. Then I went to work in a consultancy. And so the point at which Roseanne and I decided we would set up our business, let go of the safety blanket, you really start to think of what does that mean as for a couple working together. There's even another layer of complexity and opportunity for it. So I'd say it all starts with self-awareness. I think if you're, you know, someone like yourself, Dom, is going, you know, in some of the same kind of work that I have experience of, networking would be right at the top of my list of advice to people. And I think also know what you want to get out of it. So, you know, do you want to, you know, is it about a voyage of, you know, increasing your skills and your sense of accomplishment? Is it about having more flexibility in how you work, as you just mentioned? Is it about making money? So, you know, knowing why you are doing it, and that can change over time, as I know from my own experience. Those are the foundation stones, I would think.
And I think that changing over time is such an important insight for people, isn't it? That what you want and need and value today and your purpose is why you're doing it, that will shift and will change over time, and that's okay. So that kind of checking in moment. I mean, I just feel absolutely privileged to be in this sphere of coaching, partly because by being in a network of coaches, you get to receive some fantastic coaching in reverse. You know, this week I was having a few moments and I just, you know, dropped a WhatsApp to our group and said, can anyone spare me 40 minutes of their time? I need some coaching. And within seconds it was there. That's a real privilege, isn't it? It's a real privilege to be on the receiving end of that nourishment and that care.
Networking in action, Dom. I got a phone call on Sunday from a good friend of mine who's a sports psychologist, and he said the football team I'm working with wants me to run a session with the first team about taking the knee. I have no idea what to do. So I said, well, neither do I. let's work out, you know, what would be a useful thing to do in the situation. So it's knowing that you don't just have to rely on your own resources. He WhatsApped me a couple of days later and said, well, he said, I didn't do most of the things we discussed, but it was such a relief to talk it through with someone. It cleared my head so I could decide what I wanted to do. So it's, you know, again, back in the day, we used to call it the psychosocial support that people can give you, which is part of coaching, isn't it? That there are all different types of coaching, but I think there is a dividing line between coaching and instruction. Instruction is presenting information, telling people what they should do, and coaching may have a bit of that, but has a great deal of giving people a space where they can get their own head straight and their own emotions, under control, so that they can make a good decision for themselves rather than follow the advice you give them as a coach.
Thank you so much for coming on to Coach Class. We'll leave it there because that was such an elegant end, describing coaching in the way that you have. I absolutely wholeheartedly agree. I hope that we'll stay in touch. It's been a real pleasure getting to know you over the last 4 months. And thank you so much for coming on to Coach Class.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for the opportunity, Dom. Good luck with your coaching.